You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to another edition of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Superman number 1, Detective Comics number 984, Flash number 50, Titans number 34, Plastic Man number 2, and Krypton season 1, episode 1, pilot. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news, I have writer G. Willow Wilson and artist Carrie Nord are taking over DC Comics Wonder Woman ongoing with November 14th's Wonder Woman number 58. Their first storyline is called The Just War, and it begins with Wonder Woman going to save Steve Trevor after his military unit comes up missing in action.
I am very, very excited by this announcement. For people who aren't familiar with Wilson, she's actually the writer who created the current version of Ms. Marvel, Kamala Khan, over at Marvel, which has been a massive, massive hit for Marvel, especially for young adults. And if she can kind of put some of that magic into Wonder Woman, that would be awesome. I also think she's a good writer. Like, I legitimately enjoy those stories that she's written for Ms. Marvel. I don't know. I think it's a really exciting thing. I think she's one of the more noteworthy female writers out there right now. Certainly there are other ones, but you know, to stick her on Wonder Woman, I think is a great choice.
I'm looking forward to it also. All right, and for our next bit of DC news, Static Shock artist Kyle Baker has announced that Milestone imprint's relaunching this October. I don't think DC's announced it yet, but he has. And he says his Static Shock series he's illustrating is going to be bi-monthly. Originally, it was going to be monthly, but they switched it to bi-monthly, according to him. So I'm guessing we'll probably hear that out of San Diego Comic-Con this weekend.
Now, is this the, correct me if I'm wrong, is this the imprint that's focused on like those sort of bi-monthly, almost like trade-focused stories? Am I remembering that correctly?
Milestone? If I remember right, Milestone used to be its own comic company. It was bought by DC. So It had its own line of characters.
Gotcha.
That's what I remember. I don't really remember reading any Milestone titles, per se, but...
Yeah, I don't know. I could have sworn I read something recently that DC was going to have... One of their imprints was focused more on, like, the sort of mini-series that we've been reading since Rebirth started, that they were going to have an imprint focused on that. Maybe I'm just mixing things up.
I'm not sure. I don't remember seeing anything on that.
Regardless, I like the fact that the Static Shock sounds like it's going to be bi-monthly. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Give it more time.
All right, and moving on to our next bit of DC news. DC and Hanna-Barbera will cross over again this fall. And looks like they got four more titles coming out. We've got Deathstroke Yogi Bear Special Number 1, Green Lantern Huckleberry Hound Special Number 1, Nightwing Magilla Gorilla Special Number 1, and Superman Top Cat Special Number 1.
Russell's writing the Green Lantern one. He's the guy I've recommended it a couple times. The Flintstone series. He's the guy that wrote that, and it was really good. They generally throw him on one of the Hanna-Barbera titles, so that would be the one I would look forward to, just because he's done really good work with those before.
And honestly, that's the one that looked most interesting to me when I was looking at these.
Doesn't hurt that it's Green Lantern also, so.
Yeah, that too. All right, well, if you want to check out the creative teams for all those titles, check out our posting on our Facebook book group. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
What is the Geekly Oddcast? It's a panel show of television, I mean, seriously, where else was I supposed to go and watch Gomez Adams ride a rocket ship on a railroad track?
Gaming.
And the dice say 17.
Oh my god, 17 is Mystic Quest. And whatever comes to mind.
Why does Zod need a starship?
Alternating Thursdays on The Geekly Oddcast.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. For you.
All right, let's talk Superman number one.
This was a pretty good continuation out of the Man of Steel miniseries, I thought.
I thought so, too, and a lot of stuff was going on in this, I thought.
I have to say, I don't know if this mean it as a criticism, but I do feel like you kind of had to read Man of Steel for this number one. I don't know that it was the most accessible number one that I've seen.
Yeah, I agree with you, because without reading Man of Steel, you would have gone into this going, what the heck is going on?
Yeah. I mean, he does explain a little bit. Like, I don't know that, like, you could go into it, but you would be missing. I feel like you'd definitely be missing a chunk. Kind of like how we talked about with Man of Steel. It was nice, but it didn't feel like it would be one that would stand on its own. Like, if you read it in a collection, it wouldn't make sense if you never read what came after it. I feel like this one also, I feel like you kind of, like, whenever Bendis's stuff for Superman gets collected, I feel like you'd have to basically, that Man of Steel would have to start that run. Like, I don't think you could separate them out and start with just this as number one.
Yeah, I agree with you there. All right. Well, one of the interesting things I found in this issue was the building of the new Fortress of Solitude, moving it to the Bermuda Triangle. I'm really intrigued what he's going to do with that.
It's kind of cool. It also feels like trying to be cool. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
It was sort of like it had the same sort of flavor as like the 90s Aquaman had, where they kind of went over the top with how badass Aquaman was supposed to be. Look, he's got a hook now too. It didn't feel quite as forced, but it was like, I mean, it's cool, but what was wrong with the North Pole? I know it got destroyed, but, like, I don't know. Unnecessary, I guess.
Well, I'm interested. It's not going to be any cool unless he does something with it. You know what I mean? It's in the Bermuda Triangle where it's this area that's supposed to be mysterious. I'm hoping he does something mysterious with it. Otherwise, why move it there?
Exactly. Yeah. So we'll see. I would agree with you. I would assume you're going to do something. There's got to be a reason to put it there, because, like you said, otherwise, like, why? Like, you're just doing it just to be cool. And it's like, I mean, just leave it. North Pole's cool too.
So, and with the North Pole, most likely nobody's going there.
Right.
But it'll be interesting. I'm curious to see if he's going to do something with the Bermuda Triangle. If he doesn't, it's just a waste of time, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I also love the scene we had in this where Clark and John were talking about school and girls and stuff, because it gave it that Tomasi feel.
I agree completely. That was one of the first scenes where I was like, oh, he did read Tomasi's run.
So I really enjoyed that scene.
That and was good.
And I hope we get more moments like that when John gets back from his little trip.
I had conflicted feelings about the scene with him and Martian Manhunter. What I really liked was how Superman kept leaving the conversation to go save something every 30 seconds. That was really cool. And I thought that was like, yeah, that's Superman. That would be like what trying to talk to Superman would be like. I really liked that idea. Then what Martian Manhunter was advocating for was odd.
I have thought that was odd too. I have to agree with you. The conversation with him zooming off every 30 seconds definitely felt like Superman. And What was funny was Martian Manhunter's reaction to that was just like, you know, this is normal.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was kind of cool. Martian Manhunter talking about Clark being almost a dictator. I was like, I don't know about that.
And then combine that with, we'll get to it in a couple minutes, but what we saw in the Titans title, part of me almost wonders if DC's up with something again with Martian Manhunter. But like, why? One of the big problems, I think, with the New 52 is that they really seriously screwed up Martian Manhunter and couldn't really ever get it fixed. If they're hinting that there's something sinister going on with him, like, you don't need that. That was the whole thing that was hanging over him during the New 52.
Yeah, we don't need that.
I mean, again, I don't know that that's what they're going to, but that was sort of between this and what we see in Titans. It was almost like, wait, are you hinting at something here? We'll see. I mean, it could be something good, but it could also, you know, be doing some sort of weird, morally gray area. I assume they wouldn't go full villain with Martian Manhunter, but I don't know.
Unless,
I kind of like him as more of like the, you know, the heart of the Justice League.
Yeah, I do too. Unless he's not the real Martian Manhunter.
Which I think could be an interesting story if Martian Manhunter hadn't basically been MIA for the majority of the New 52. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
if you're doing this story while Martian Manhunter was around and was, you know, very present within Justice League and DC Comics in general, I would be pretty interested in that story. But when he's not been around and you're finally kind of bringing him back and making him a focus again, then it's sort of like, well, wait. But we're just speculating on nothing as of right now, so we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, it may go nowhere.
yeah, exactly. It might just be a random conversation, so we'll see.
One thing I was disappointed about, it felt like they were going to start delving into the fire mystery, and then it just fizzled.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they're saving that for Action Comics or what. Because I don't know if you saw that article I posted about Newsarama interviewing Bendis. Action Comics is supposed to be more street level, while the Superman title is supposed to be more galactic, I guess.
That makes sense. That's cool.
So that's what he was talking about in that article. So I was like, cool.
And we kind of speculated that it might be something like that, where one of the titles might focus more on what John and Lois are doing, which, if Superman is more cosmically focused, it would make sense that that would be the title.
Yeah.
Where he's going out and doing stuff like that.
So
that's nice. I also like, I think if they do put the fire story into Action Comics, I like that because it allows Action Comics to focus on that story.
Yeah. Well, Bendis said that Action Comics is also going to focus more on the Daily Planet and stuff. So we're going to get that. We're going to get more of a street level story there. So that's what's going
to
be the focus.
That's very interesting to me, because I would think you would want to flip flop the two, given the name Action Comics.
I you know what? I thought the same thing, and then I was just like, you know what? It doesn't really matter.
No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all. I'm surprised that that's the route that they went, especially because they explicitly went the opposite direction for Rebirth, right?
Yeah.
Action Comics was supposed to be more of a, I mean, it didn't really turn out that way. I mean, I guess technically Action Comics ended up being more action-y focused, but I felt like that was just because that's just Juergens as a writer compared to Tomasi. You know what I mean? I didn't feel like it was necessarily an overt focus.
Yeah. And Tomasi's was very family focused and loved it, and I miss him.
Yeah.
No matter how good the story is, Bendis, I still miss Tomasi. All right, we get to the end of this issue, and we find out that the Earth has been pulled into the Phantom Zone. I thought that
feels like something that would be hard to miss happening, don't you?
Yeah, I was wondering how that happened. I'm sure it's going to get explained, but we got there. I was like, well, how the heck did that happen? But it is an interesting concept.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what's going on. I'm assuming this means Rogel Zar is going to come back. We're going to have a more kind of satisfying conflict with that.
Yeah. I still haven't seen the announcement of Supergirl, when Supergirl's supposed to be starting up again. Because we know she's going to be looking into the history of Rogol Zaar. So that's going to be interesting too.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Detective Comics number 984. I want to bring justice to this world, our villain tells the Russian woman he bought the mask from. Dude calls himself Karma, and that they're coming for Batman.
I'm really not intrigued by this story. I can't lie. Like, as I was reading through it, all I could think to myself was like, I am just not engaged in what's going in this story right now. I don't know what it is. We talked about this last time we reviewed this title. It just feels like a story we've read before. Even if it obviously it has certain new things to it, including the villain. But like, I don't know. It feels very samey.
Because we're over it.
Yeah, especially it felt even more so in this one where he's trying to recruit Cassie over to his side. It's like, I mean, what are we doing? I don't know. I mean, there was nothing in this comic that was explicitly bad. It was just, to me, it was very forgettable. It felt like a Batman story I had read a lot. And so I don't know. It just kind of went in one ear and out the other when I was reading.
Yeah, I know what you mean. We have this villain, Karma, who is trying to turn the Bat family against Batman, basically. Like Cletus said, Karma is trying to recruit Cassandra to help his cause against Batman. And last issue, it looked like he was trying to kill the sidekicks. So now he's trying to recruit him. I don't know.
I think it's just specifically her. I think because he said somehow she had the focus that he wanted, whereas like the signal, he basically said was a garbage sidekick. Where I was like, I mean, he's not entirely wrong.
And this villain Karma obviously knows everybody's secret identity. So I'm wondering if it's somebody we're supposed to know.
I don't know if he knows, but he figures it out because he's got that helmet lets him read their thoughts.
Is that what it is? The helmet lets him read their thoughts?
Yeah, it mentions that because then that's why when he, after he knocks Batman out and he's walking away, he's like, interesting, of all the moments you choose to remember, you remember the pearls.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was interesting.
Yeah, so I don't, it might be a combination of the two where he knows who they are and then finds out even more through whatever that psychic thing is. I don't know. I don't know exactly what it is, but he definitely is at least getting significant information from being able to read their minds.
Plus, that helmet also gives him the ability to steal metahumans' powers. He uses Black Lightning's powers against him and Batman.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, it could be, one of those things where it's a boring setup and then it leads to a more interesting story down the road.
That could be.
Who knows? Well, I don't know. And like I said, this is like, I know we don't really rate comics anymore, but like if I were to rate this one, it would just be like a 5. You know what I mean? Like it's straight down the middle of the road. There's nothing exciting going on in it, for me at least.
Yeah, because it's basically all set up for the most part. And it looks like who Black Lightning is going to be training is Duke Thomas, Cassandra Cain, and Barbara Gordon so far. And that seems like a pretty small team. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week. Flash number 50. Hunter Zolomon is now in control of the Speed Force, the Strength Force, the Sage Force, and the Steel Force. And we still don't know what the Steel Force is.
Well, I don't know that he has control of the Steel Force. It seems like that's the one that he's trying to get, and they stop before he's able to quite get to the Steel Force during that. Because it says at one point he mentions there's one last force, and they kind of piece together that it's the Steel Force. And that.
Yeah, I'm not really interested in all these forces.
Honestly, I think it's a really dumb idea. I'm not going to lie. Like I think it's an actively stupid idea. I just don't know. Especially, I mean, this comic, to me, I felt demonstrated why it was a bad idea, because he ultimately doesn't really do anything with those other two. I mean, he sort of does, but I feel like it's one of those ones where it almost, it almost needs to be cinematic in order to show off him using all those things at once, because when you're drawing it, you can kind of really only it's hard to show him doing multiple things, you know? And that's how it kind of came across. It mainly still just came down to him running fast.
Yeah. The other thing that happens in this is hypertime's broken. So none of the flashes can travel through time. And I got this feeling that nobody could travel through time. Is that what you got out of this?
I don't know. I just took it as the speedsters, but it could mean everyone. That's definitely possible. I mean, they're the ones that mainly do the time traveling.
Yeah. I was wondering, is this going to affect Booster Gold somehow or other time travelers? I was just curious because even Commander Cold couldn't travel through time anymore.
Yeah, so yeah, you might be right. It might just be everybody. So that could be, that felt like that would have the most ramifications, to be honest, as I was reading the comic. I was like, I feel like these other forces, to be totally honest with you, I feel like they're going to be free. They're going to be one of those things like in 5 years, they're just going to be gone.
I think it's going to be gone before then, honestly.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't see a lot of interesting things to be done there.
I don't either. Go ahead. I was just going to bring up this mysterious villain known as Crisis, who escaped his cell in the 25th century. Do you have any clue who this villain is?
I don't. I mean, honestly, my first thought just went to the Annie Monitor, just because they showed a couple panels from Infinite or Crisis on Infinite Earths, and that just seems like, I don't know. That was my only guess, and I don't know that it is him. That was just the only thing that I thought of, was the Annie Monitor.
The other question I had was, I thought the 25th century was erased.
Yeah, I don't know. Speaking of that, I thought Wally's anger at Barry was 100%, was the first time in this one when somebody was been pissed off at Barry that I've been like, yes, completely yes, I am on your side. Because he just ditches them. They just inexplicably ditch them in the future. And then Barry's just like, oh, sorry, I wasn't thinking. Like, how do you not think? Oh, whoops, forgot three people in the future.
And one of them is the love of your life.
Oh, jeez, that was, yeah. I was very much on Wally's side for that one. That was the Flash War that I actually could pick a side on. I was frustrated with this comic for twofold. I mean, it ended in the, just like if, how we kind of assumed it. It just was such a cliche comic, I guess. Don't get me wrong, I love superhero comics, but this just felt like the most like paint-by-numbers superhero conclusion. Just like the superhero is explaining how he's going to be winning, and then all of a sudden the other hero finds what's the reserves of his strength and wins somewhat inexplicably. And then everything's kind of hunky-dory, but then another villain who's an even bigger villain steps up at the end. It was like, well, what was even the point of this story? Like, you push this big flash war, and then it turns into more of a setup for this other thing. It also didn't seem to accomplish a whole lot other than just kind of being a dumb story. I don't know. I was very dissatisfied by it. Like, I've not been a huge fan of this storyline, but I thought it was just so predictable, I guess.
Yeah. And then it wasn't even that surprising that Bart Allen's back.
No, and that was the thing. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily have guessed Bart, but you could have put any speedster there and been like, oh yeah, okay, there's the expected cameo right at the end.
Yep.
Like, you know what? It felt so paint by numbers, just like it hit all of the boxes that, like, you know, the prototypical conclusion to a storyline should hit. And it just, I don't know. I wasn't really, I don't need to be shocked by every revelation or anything like that, but I do want it to take some like interesting turns, and this was mostly just I don't know, it was like, yeah, okay, and then yep, that happens, okay, and then oh, and there's Bart, okay.
Yeah, and the other thing this did was it got Kid Flash mad at Barry, where he's going to be leaving and going off on this new Teen Titans team.
But we've already done that. Like, I mean, like, I agree with his anger, but we've already done this storyline. Like, how many times does Wally need to get mad at Barry?
apparently, every other issue.
It's more common that they don't get along than they do. I can only think of a handful of issues where they're actually on, like, the same page all the time.
Yeah, and I'm really getting tired of this version of Barry Allen, honestly. Because all he does is go from one mistake to the next mistake and never seems to do anything right.
He's kind of incompetent, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just not good at being a superhero.
Not my favorite version of Barry.
No, not at all. Again, this is one of those ones, I wouldn't necessarily consider this a bad comic, but it was just, it was just very...
It was mediocre.
Yeah, just very mundane. I don't know, I was not excited as I was reading it. It was just more of like, okay, and that's how it ends, all right. That's fine. It was fine.
And this was supposed to be the big story, but it felt like it was just setting up something else.
Well, that was what made me... That was actually the thing that bothered me the most, was when they revealed that sort of villain at the end. I was like, what the hell? Like, this was your big story. And it was such a... To me, the big conclusion fizzled so much because it was so clear. Like, it was so, like, Bond, like, old school Bond villainy, where, like, the villain taunts the hero until long enough for the hero to win. It was not satisfying. Like, Zoom's conflict was just not satisfying at all to me. I would have much rather have seen this story end, to be honest with you. I would have loved to see this story end with Zoom winning. And then the next story arc is them undoing Zoom's win. That, to me, is interesting. That's a cool story.
Well, Zoom sort of won, but not really. Of course, he didn't get captured either. He's still out there somewhere.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. Like, you can technically say, well, I mean, the Flashes didn't win, so if that's the case, he won. But, you know, he didn't really accomplish what he actually wanted to accomplish,
which was to kill the Flashes,
right? I just think it'd be really interesting if you had him succeed in Hypertime and create a world where he is the Flash, and then you get the next five or six issues are it starts out in a world where he's the Flash. Like, how interesting is that?
That would be very interesting.
And it's not like I'm pulling this out of nowhere. Like, the potential for that story is right there. I don't know. See, that's the thing to me. Like, that would be such an intriguing story instead of just the same old villain gets defeated right at the end. Like, if you're just going to pile on powers for no reason just to have them be defeated, then why give them the extra powers? You know, it doesn't, to me, that doesn't build suspense. You have to actually have them succeed. I don't care what their powers are. If they don't actually succeed, my suspense isn't built up at all.
Exactly. All right, let's move on to Titans number 34. And it looks like we have an all-new lineup of Titans. Well, not all-new, but... So, the Titans have been commissioned by the Justice League to investigate the dark energy released because of the breaking of the Source Wall. And it looks like our new lineup is... We have Nightwing as the team leader. Raven's the empath, of course. We have Steel, who's the tech person. We don't actually see her with her mask off, but I'm guessing she's the niece of John Henry Irons.
I am 99% sure that's who that is. I did think it was very odd that they didn't give her name.
Yeah.
I thought that was a little weird. It was like, there's going to be, I would say, at least half the people reading this comic might not know who she is.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I'm surprised they didn't give her name. We also had Beast Boy, of course. He's the shapeshifter. We had Donna Troy, and she's the combat specialist. And Ms. Martian, who's the Justice League liaison. And I thought that was just kind of weird. Why she just seemed to come out of the blue to be a Justice League liaison.
I like how they used her in this, because she's basically Martian Manhunter, but for the Titans. I was like, this is completely logical. I totally get it. What I didn't understand was Nightwing's reluctance to have her on the in the field. I was like, Miss Martian's gonna be more powerful than Beast Boy.
Yeah, that was weird.
I do think she's a very interesting part of the team. The thing that we and I talked, I hinted at this earlier. At one point, you get at the end, after this comic ends, they have sort of a tease for what's to come. And one of them is Martian Manhunter saying there's some sort of secret mission that she's on with the Titans that they don't know about. And that's one of those things, again, where it's like, what is Martian Manhunter up to?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So we see him being mysterious again. Weird, huh?
But as the thing is interesting is that in Justice League, where I would say he's been one of the main characters, he hasn't really come across as
mysterious.
Like mysterious in that he's gained knowledge to things that the others haven't, but like not mysterious in a potentially villainous way like these other two have been.
Yeah. So are we gonna see that in Justice League or not really, because that's not where Snyder's going?
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
And then one would assume that if he is, whatever he's up to, clearly Miss Martian's in on it too, which makes sense. But
yeah.
One thing I wasn't sure was the secret. He says that keep your secrets to yourself. Are they going to have her secret being that she's a white Martian a secret again? Because, like, oh my God, I don't need to read that story again.
Yeah, I was wondering the same thing, and I was thinking the same thing. Because I'm like, we don't really need to retell this story.
I think especially, she is definitely on that team, I think, in large part because of Young Justice. And, like, I think a lot of people that would be excited to see her on that would be fans of Young Justice. So, like, if that's the case, also if they've seen Supergirl, like, they know that she's a white Martian. That's not going to be an interesting story for people.
No. Now, do you think Impulse will end up on this team?
Probably.
That's what I'm wondering. If they brought him back in Flash, but he's going to end up on this Titans team.
I don't know if he'll be on the Titans, though, because they drew him quite young. That's the thing. I don't know, because he looked like he might be the same age as Wally.
Do you think he's going to be Barry's new sidekick, then?
It's possible.
Since Kid Flash is going to the Teen Titans.
We'll see. I don't know. I honestly don't know. I mean, Titans, I can't imagine Bart going to the Titans over the older Wally. Especially just the way that they drew him, he would be so much younger than everybody else on that team.
That's true. I'm just wondering what the heck they're gonna do with him.
No, I'm right there with you. I honestly don't know what their plans are for him exactly.
Because honestly, we don't need another speedster.
No, we don't. We really don't. I actually was a little bit. I thought we were gonna get the one thing I guess that did surprise me that Flash War didn't do was that they didn't bring back all of the speedsters, because I kind of thought that's what they were gonna do. And I was a little bit relieved, because, like, we don't need Cobalt Blue and Speedy and, or not Speedy, Jesse Quick and Impulse and Wally's two kids. It's a lot. That's a lot of speedsters.
That is a lot of speedsters. Too many speedsters. We got plenty of speedsters now. But we'll have to keep our eye on this Titans title and see what's going on. All right, let's move on to our last title for this week, Plastic Man number 2.
I know I'm biased because I love Plastic Man, but, like, this was an objectively good comic. This was so good. The things like the basically like the Where's Waldo page. How great was that page?
It was freaking hilarious. This whole first, I guess it's the first quarter of the issue, she had me dying laughing. Oh, man. I'm loving Gail Simone on this title.
Oh, yeah. And it's so funny, because I don't think I would have, like, if you had asked me ideal Plastic Man writers, she would not have been on my list, not because I don't consider her to be a great writer, because she is, but, like, she's not somebody I would have thought of, and she has just been killing it these first two issues. And I gotta give credit to the artist as well. I mean, this was so good.
It was
so good.
Batwoman's face when she goes to Plastic Man, and no, I don't want to see your slide trombone. Oh, man. That look the artist gave her, that was freaking hilarious. Oh, man. So many funny moments.
His interrogation, like that whole opening scene where, and I love the way they do it too, where the first page starts with him kind of punching towards the end of the page. And then his arm extends through the next, like, two or three pages.
I know.
Including the Where's Waldo page, and then ends with his fist. And it was like, that was That was such a cool touch. And the way it was broken up into all those different interrogations, and he's in different sort of Plastic Man transformations. Oh, just fantastic. Just really, really good.
And the Where's Waldo page was hilarious, because if you read what you're supposed to have been looking for, that was no kids. Kids, Where's Waldo? That's for
and
sure.
There was stuff that was hidden in there that was also not listed. That was super funny too.
Oh yeah. That was great.
I highly, highly recommend this series, especially if you're looking for something that's like easy to jump into, because you honestly don't need to know anything about Plastic Man. Because this series is explaining his origin to you, and it's just kind of telling a story with him. And it's also, I think, so far been an awesome exhibition for what comic art can do. Like, you can really do these kind of funky storytelling things with comic art that you can't do in other mediums, that I think this comic is taking full advantage of so far.
So this felt like we're getting a Plastic Man who's recently got his powers. Is that what it felt like to you?
Yes, I think so. I got that impression as well, that it's not immediately after, but it's fairly recent that he's been Plastic Man.
Yeah, because when he finds out that the bullets don't hurt him, I was like, wait a minute, shouldn't he already know that by now?
Yeah, so that surprised me at first, because I was expecting it to be, you know, an experienced Plastic Man, but I kind of like it. I think it's kind of cool where he's experienced enough that he's already got his you know, distinct personality within his transformations, but he's still also kind of like not great at his job yet either.
Yeah, he's got his powers down, we see, because he can transform almost into anything he wants, so he's got that down, but he's still pretty naive.
Yeah.
He found out that taser guns do affect him, and that kid with the hoodie, I'm guessing his name is Pato Swak.
Well, it turns out it's a girl.
Well, yeah, I know it turns out to. Okay, so let us jump ahead. Yes, we find out it's a girl, but I'm guessing her name was Pato Swak. Pato?
I don't think that. I feel like that's not her real name. Oh. I feel like there's something. It feels fake to me.
You think Plastic Man just made it up?
No, I think she made it up.
Oh, okay. I guess that makes sense. The mystery of who she really is. She is pretty interesting character, though.
Yeah.
She's got a lot of street smarts.
She does. And I like the sort of the way that Gail Simone is writing the relationship between the two of them, where, in all honesty, she's been more helpful to Plastic Man than the other way around.
Yeah, definitely. Especially when I like how they show Plastic Man was so afraid of Batman getting him that he leaves her stranded with Man-Bat.
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty hilarious. Him thinking that Man-Bat was actually Batman fit him.
I thought it fit him. I also think that was one of the things, I think, that making it early career Plastic Man makes it interesting, because you can have a moment like that. And it works, because like, if you're not an established superhero who pals around with Batman, you don't really know what he looks like. Because I think it's hard to remember sometimes for most people. In theory, Batman is still sort of like, you know, this kind of unknown force.
Right. And you got to see Batman from a criminal's perspective, because that's basically what Plastic Man had, was a criminal's perspective of Batman. That fear that he instills into criminals, definitely Plastic Man felt that.
Yeah, and it was funny too, because the minute he figures out that it's Man-Bat instead, he's instantly like, oh, this is fine.
Yeah.
it's the same thing that he's seen, and the instant that it's not Batman, something in his head goes, oh, no, this is okay.
But we do see that Man-Bat actually is able to scratch him and hurt him. So we know Plastic Man's not invulnerable.
That was surprising. That was very surprising to me. So I'll be curious to see what's up with that, because in theory, that's generally not something that's possible to do to Plastic Man.
So, and we still know nothing more about this cabal, really.
Yeah, and I'm very curious to see, like, the mystery intrigues me with this. That's the thing I like, is that she's really tapping into, like, classic Plastic Man, where he was working with the FBI to solve mysteries. It's just, it's great, where you're getting a lot of the humor that goes with Plastic Man, but also really kind of calling back to his roots as a sort of cop drama. It's good stuff. This is really good stuff.
Yeah, it sure is. I'm looking forward to the next issue.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I am all in on this series. I already was anyway, of course. I mean, as soon as they announced the Plastic Man series, but the fact that it's this good, this is awesome.
Yeah, it sure is. All right. Well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk Krypton.
You ever been curious about the real or fictional worlds?
In the beginning, there were laser kings and giant robots.
Those who created.
I'm going to feed you to this tentacle monster now. No.
Or what inspires.
And I remember being in my room with my brother, and we immediately, like within 5 seconds, he decided he was a DC fan and I decided I was a Marvel fan. And we were going through and sorting out all of the comics.
And you might enjoy Hubie Tigers, the only podcast show where we take life by the tail. Now available on Google Play, Stitcher, and iTunes, and of course your favorite podcasting network. This is Hubie Tigers.
And we're back. Let's talk Krypton, Season 1, Episode 1, Pilot.
So I want to start off with what I would consider, after watching the first episode, my biggest complaint with this show. Sci-Fi, what are you doing? Why is this thing not on Netflix or Hulu? What are you doing? This is a good show. I think they're hurting themselves, honestly. I think more people would watch this and they would – I think – similar to, I don't think it would have the same jump that Riverdale did, but Riverdale was sort of successful season one, and then it hit Netflix over the summer, and then all of a sudden season two, boom, one of the biggest shows on CW because everybody watched it over the summer. Sci-Fi, come on, let's pick up your game, guys.
Yeah, because you got to have Sci-Fi to be able to watch this thing.
Yeah.
So I agree with you on that. The pilot here was all set up. We find out that the main character's name is Seg. He's the grandfather of Kal-El. And it doesn't really dive into Superman lore that much, I don't think. It's more about Krypton and Krypton's government history and stuff.
And what I think is really interesting with this is that It's Krypton's history, but it's not quite right. And I think that allows I think that's so clever because it allows the show to kind of tell its own story, and it kind of excuses anything where, like, oh, technically this guy should have been doing this thing at this time in Kryptonian history. Well, no, because yes, in theory, that's how history should have gone, but something changed and now it's playing out differently.
Right. So we see this episode open up with Seg's a boy. And his grandfather doesn't agree with the new government, and basically they kill him. And the House of El becomes rankless, and they end up living in the underground, I guess you want to call it, or the scum of Krypton. I don't know what you want to call it, but we see Seg, and we meet his best friend that owns a bar. We find out his girlfriend is in the military guild. That was the other thing I thought was interesting. They had all these different guilds. You had the Law Guild and the Military Guild and the Science Guild.
And that she's a Zod, too, if I'm remembering correctly.
Is she a Zod? I wasn't sure about that.
I will admit I could have misheard, but I'm almost positive she's a Zod. I thought that was intriguing also. I agree with you. I thought the guild thing was – the whole class system I thought was fascinating, how they kind of got into, like, I thought that was kind of cool, because generally when you see Krypton's history, you're seeing, you know, right towards the end, but you're seeing specifically the House of El, which were clearly very influential and successful. You know what I mean? So it's kind of interesting seeing what potentially the other side could have been like. What that, because they always kind of hint that Krypton, there was issues going on with Krypton. And the way that they've chosen to explore that with this kind of really kind of terrible class system, I think is very interesting.
Yeah, it is very interesting. Then they introduce this, the Genesis Chamber, where we got to see, because we've always had the version of Krypton where they genetically grew their children. And we got to see this here. They have something they called the binding. I don't know if I could, I wasn't sure because they didn't explore it too in depth, but I didn't know if the binding meant when you were bound to somebody, I didn't think that was this actual marriage. You just created a offspring together. Is that what you understood from that?
That was my understanding from watching the show. The binding specifically referred to creating an offspring, but I assumed that that sort of went hand in hand a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, I can't.
It was unclear.
Yeah, it was a little, I felt like the binding specifically was that act, but it felt like if you're doing that, you are essentially married. I felt like it was sort of both. It was sort of like a two for one. I don't know.
Yeah, it felt like that, but that's, we didn't see, we saw Seg get binded to that one girl from the,
well, that, not the, quite. They were sort of, it was sort of like a preview of like what it would look like.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
But not the actual thing hadn't happened yet. It was more of like a precursor.
Right. And we obviously, we know Seg had a different girlfriend than who that he was going to get binded to. And the same with his girlfriend. She was supposed to be binded to somebody else too.
Yeah.
As we saw.
And it kind of seems like that guy might be some sort of antagonist. I don't think necessarily a major one, but it definitely seemed like he was not set up to be an ally for them from what we saw.
I don't know if this is supposed to be the ruler. The dude with a three-face mask, whether it's a woman or a male.
The voice of Rao, I think is what they call it. Yeah.
The voice of Rao. Creep. That mask is creepy, if you ask me.
It is creepy. Do you think, now I have only seen this episode. I know it's already aired, so people listening might know the answer to this already, in which case, please don't tell me. I want to find out for myself, but do you think that's Brainiac? I almost felt like that is Brainiac.
I did not think so.
You think they're separate? The voice of Rao is clearly a villain.
I didn't think it was Brainiac. I mean, we saw Brainiac. They introduced Brainiac at the end, and he's supposed to be the one coming from the future to collect Krypton.
Do you think
Krypton.
He came to the future, though, and is already there? That's the thing. I was almost wondering if like they're worried about him coming, but he's actually already there.
Now that would be an interesting concept. I didn't get that feeling when I was watching it, but now that
it could also be something that somebody who's working for Brainiac. I don't know. I honestly, like I said, I have only seen this episode, but I am more than intrigued enough to keep watching to find out.
I am too. The other thing they talked about was Black Zero, which is the terrorist group that's supposed to be against the current order. We never really see anybody from the Black Zero terrorist group except for the dude with the bomb in his arm.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if we're going to find out more about them also soon, because I'm sure Seg's going to get mixed in with them.
Probably. That's always the interesting thing with pilots, though, is like not everything always makes it to the second episode. Like Oliver's maid in Arrow. Remember, she's a character in the pilot, and then she's just gone. And then they randomly brought her back. I think last season she's been around again.
Yeah, because she was helping watch Oliver's son. But I'm very intrigued by this series.
It was very. I have to say, I was surprised at how well produced it was. I will admit, it's been a long time since I've seen a sci-fi show, but the ones that I remember watching were not this good. Like sci-fi in my head has generally been more of like your B-film kind of, B-movie kind of stuff.
One thing I have to say about, I was not expecting the Adam Strange we got.
Yeah, he's definitely not the. Not the classic kind of space adventurer that you normally see.
Yeah. So he's going to be an interesting character. I'm sure that's going to be popping up to kind of guide Seg along. And it was also interesting, the Fortress of Solitude that we saw. I'm wondering what secrets are hidden in there.
That is interesting, but it also seems... That one was the one that was sort of odd. It was like, why are we doing another Fortress of Solitude here? But we'll see. I am very intrigued by it.
So, I am too. And I think we should finish watching the series and then come back later in the summer and talk about the rest of it we watched.
Yeah. I have to say, if people haven't checked it out, based on what I saw with the pilot, at least check out the pilot. Because it's interesting. I think watching it will tell you whether it's something that would intrigue you or not, to be honest with you. I think you can make up your mind, honestly, after this episode.
I think so, too. And we'll come back later this summer and do a wrap-up of the whole season in one episode. Sound good, Cletus?
Yeah, definitely. I'll be on it. I mean, like I said, my biggest thing after watching this show is like, sci-fi, up your game, guys. Get this show out there. Get people watching it.
Yeah, exactly.
My hope is that it'll pop up on the DC streaming service, potentially. At least the older seasons, maybe not the new seasons, but...
That would make sense. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. What's your shout-out, Cletus?
Especially the one brief scene of Brainiac that we get reminded me strongly of a specific run from the late 2000s by Jeff Johns and Gary Frank called Brainiac, Superman Brainiac. It's collected into a trade that's just called Superman Brainiac. If you're looking at issue numbers, it was Action Comics 866 through 870. It's really good. It reintroduces the idea of that sort of Silver Age humanoid Brainiac. It's got some other interesting things that kind of become the status quo for Superman for quite some time after that. And it's just a good story. It's a really good Superman versus Brainiac story. And of course, it's drawn by Gary Frank, who is a fantastic artist and works really well with Jeff Johns.
All right, and we'll have that in our show notes. I'm going to shout out about Smallville. If you haven't seen, if you want more Superman and you're not getting, you've already seen Krypton and stuff, but you haven't seen Smallville, check it out on Hulu. Because it's kind of an in-depth, what I want to say, prequel to a Superman. And you get to see how he grew up and how him and Lex started off as best friends and then deviated from that. It's an interesting series. And I believe it's on Hulu.
It is. At least last I saw it was.
So, it goes on for 10 seasons. It's a lot of stuff there.
It went on a long time.
And one of the things that made me think about Smallville was the keystone that Adam Strange gives Seg. It looked just like the one from the Smallville series.
Interesting.
So, all right. If you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can call our feedback line at 317-564-9133, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. Next week, we're going to be talking Batman number 51, which I'm very anxious to read and see what the aftermath from the wedding issue.
And it's the start of a Mr. Freeze arc, which I'm really excited about because I'm very curious to see what kind of story Tom King tells with that.
Yeah, I am too. We also have Justice League number 4, The Brave and the Bold Batman and Wonder Woman number 6. We'll wrap up that miniseries. And hopefully we'll have tons of news from San Diego Comic-Con.
Aquaman trailer.
Yes, Aquaman trailer, and hopefully Shazam trailer too.
Yeah, I'm crossing my fingers for that. I think we'll get a Shazam one too. That one, I'm very excited for both of those movies, especially Shazam, because that's just one of my favorite characters.
So I'm hoping we find out more stuff like what Tom King's secret series he's doing is.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping they reveal that. So hopefully we get lots of DC news out of this.
Oh, I'm sure we'll have a lot of stuff to talk about. I can't wait. Comic-Con is always super fun with all the news and the excitement that comes out of it.
Yes, it is. And if you do have the Sci-Fi Channel, I noticed when I was watching Krypton, that they are going to be having special broadcasts from San Diego Comic-Con. So if you want to find out some stuff, check out Sci-Fi Channel this weekend. All right, well, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Time to go.
You sure this is necessary?
The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so.
How long will you be gone? But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.